This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Stephen Waters. How are you, Stephen?
Very well, thank you very much.
Excellent. You're with Watershed, but you train hospitality staff.
Yeah, we coach them more than train them, in the sense that training is, I have some knowledge, you want that knowledge, I'll give you that knowledge. There's a way to do this, and you should do it my way, if we're going to be like really hardline about it. They're often
used, it's my way or the highway.
They're often used as interconnected words, but we coach people, which is, it's a different approach. It's helping people acquire skills, you know, over a period of time, or helping people acquire even attitude. So there's a sort of there's a trio which makes people good at their job. Competence, if I have it right, is a subtle combination of a skill, a knowledge, and an attitude, you know, and an approach. And, you know, when we're looking for people who are going to run restaurants skillfully, well, they do need the knowledge, but it's got a lot more to do with the skills that they have and their attitude that they have. So they're kind of competent at it.
That's what I've been trying to drain into my my girls, is attitude is so, so important. If you've got the right attitude, a business will look at you and train you and upskill you. But if you've got the wrong attitude, they'll just won't go near you with a barge pole. Well, that's my attitude anyway. So what we're going to talk about is hospitality training. We've already spoken to Neville Abraham and Sam Harrison. In fact, Sam is the person who gave me your contact detail. Well, said talk to Stephen. He is the expert in hospitality training. So what I'd like to explore is the different types of courses you guys do, who your clients are, why they choose you, and what you can help them with. So does that make sense?
Absolutely. Which one do you want to start with?
Let's start with who your clients are. Because Sam Harrison from Sam's Riverside, he's a restaurant group, small restaurant group. Is it mainly restaurants you deal with?
Or? Yeah, so we work with restaurants, bars, and much more recently, a lot of bakeries. Bakeries are emerging quite a lot. The idea when starting the business in 2004 is to offer small independent bar and restaurant businesses the opportunity to engage in management development. If you work for a large company, it's likely that your large company is offering you some form of management development. That varies a lot. But if you're a small independent company, you don't usually have the resources to put on your own management development. So my idea here was simply to offer small independent bar and restaurant businesses the opportunity to join together and to engage in management development. I was lucky enough, I've been in the hospitality business all my life. I was born in a hotel. I joined a company called Trust House Forte quite a long time ago. And I was lucky enough there, I was working in one of the independent arm called Pierhouse Inns. And I was lucky enough to be given a place, or I applied for a place on their graduate management program. And I learned a great deal there, and certainly learned a lot more than I'd ever learned at university. Mm. I was working with people who were sort of like me, a couple of years out of university, been traveling, now back, settling down, wondering what they wanted to do. And we had the same context, which is we're working in a deskless environment. We have the same context, and we were facing the same challenges, and we were more or less the same age. So I learned so much from other people on that program. Then I met a couple of young women who were starting a business. They were very keen to redefine the British pub. They were women. They were saying, this was 1988, that, you know, when a woman goes into a pub, it's not a terribly good experience for her. You know, there's a load of old men at the bar who turn around and sort of scan them. The toilets aren't particularly clean. There's no ice in the gin and tonic. And it doesn't really feel like a good experience. So they wanted to de-emphasize the bar. They wanted it not to be product-driven. They wanted a sense of conviviality. And more than anything, they were working on what they described to me as a sort of a really nice hotel lobby, you know, where there is a bar in the lobby type of thing. So we took our site. We opened it. We called it Pitcher and Piano. I ran the first one. Then we opened a couple more, Chelsea and Clapham. So I ran the first three. And then they had some really strong ideas about how to create a management development program. I don't need to go into that into too much detail, but it was a radical idea that they said running a bar is as easy as falling off a log, to quote them directly. And if you want to get really good people, you want to get the best people in the country, what you've got to do is help them with their skills for life. You know, ask them what they want to be doing when they're in their early 30s, and already start to train them in that. So they did, again, something really, really radical. It had its own board of directors. They had what they called the four ships. There was leadership, customership, businessmanship, and selfmanship. And each one had had its own sort of non-exec director, if I can put it that way. And they met annually to, you know, to think about how to scope the program. We were hiring a graduate, what we call graduate caliber, not necessarily graduates. And straight right from the start, we were paying them £19,000 a year, irrespective of their rank in the bars, which that was really helpful. And right from the start, they did a year before they started the management program, you know, just to sort of find their feet. So they'd be working in the bars doing, you know, doing the pot wash, doing the bar, doing behind the bar, running food, running drinks, and so on. And then they would start the management development proper. And when the idea was, when they got to the end of it, we'd almost say, it's time to step down now and go and do what you said you were going to do. So we were sort of encouraging people to leave, rather than doing what was happening in hospitality most of the time, is that employers cross their fingers and say, we hope you're going to stay, you know, for as long as you can. Anyway, that sort of ignited my interest in management development. And then we were sold in a friendly sale to some gentlemen brewers in the Midlands called Marston's, who then were acquired in a hostile takeover bid by Wolverhampton and Dudley, who then changed their name to Marston's because Marston's had a better name. You know, and then, as often happens, you know, things started to get quite different as we, you know, we reached that sort of inflection point that businesses reach when we kind of we're up at 35 bars and it was becoming a national operation. So I sort of considered my options. I thought about starting something of my own. Didn't really have the finances to get something started, but I did know a lot of people who were interested in management development. So a lot of people who were coming out of Picture and Piano were succeeding. You know, they were starting their own businesses, and they said, you know, if you do it, we'll send some people. So it got off to a really good start. It struggled a lot for the first 10 years because I'd made the mistake of creating a business that was pretty much reflected what happened in Picture and Piano. And so the price for a person to go through the same three-year deal was £11,000. And so you had to be really good. You had to be really committed to the idea. So Lucy Walsh from Corney and Barrow was really behind the idea, and a couple of other people were really behind the idea. And then I quickly learned that the sort of price point for courses is radically different from £11,000. I started my first, I brought the price down to about £1,700. Then I was lucky enough to meet Will Beckett, who was starting up Hawksmoor at the time. And he said, if you cut the price by a third, I'll send 10 times as many people on this program, basically. Sorry, not by a third, by two thirds. So I cut the price down to about £650 for what was a 5-day program then. You know, people of, even then, when Hawksmoor really was just starting its first restaurant in Spitalfields, people were very referring to Will Beckett and Hugh Gott and sort of what they did. Other people were quite keen to do. So that gave the business a really good start. And from there, now we've developed it up to about, I'd say about 150 small independent bar and restaurant businesses. And at any one time, we're probably live with about 30 or 40. They're kind of middle market, casual dining plus. We don't do quick service restaurants particularly, nor do we do white tablecloth that much, nor do we actually do hotels actually that much. It's mostly restaurants, mostly bars. We do lots of different courses. Now I'll come on to the courses that we do in a moment. But, you know, the quality of people who are, you know, coming along to our courses, the energy is absolutely formidable. You know? So those are our customers, and some real household names, you know, St. John, Brat, Mountain, and many, many more. Please forgive me, anybody who's listening to this that I work with, that I'm not mentioning you right now. I always go blank when someone says, give me a list of your clients. But we've got some absolutely brilliant independent ones who are really behind the idea of, if you develop people, they'll stay with you. You know, yep. If you really are developing people, and if you're not applying a one-size-fits-all approach to management development, that's what makes us coaches more than training. I hope it doesn't sound too pompous. That's what we're doing. And shall I go on now to describe the actual programs that we run? I think that was one of your questions.
Just a couple of things. It was interesting you said that Picture and Piano, which quite a big... Are they still operating? I haven't been to a Picture and Piano for years.
They're a small division of a national brewery. Yeah. And people are coming to manage the Pitcher and Piano that remain. There is one in Richmond, not far away from here.
There's one
in Cold Hill, which is still going, but most of them are actually quite regional now. So they've opened up in like Southampton. I saw one recently, and they're sort of dotted around the place, but they're a pub plus, you know, they're essentially pubs, and the original integrity that the brand had, you know, has long gone.
Let's talk about the courses. Cause what I liked about the courses is you look at, say, the roles within a restaurant or a bar or whatever, and you look at as people move through the organization, you've really tuned your courses to be, okay, you're now in this new role. What are the skills you need? And here are the skills you're going to get. That's the way I sort of read through the courses. And I quite like that, actually.
Yes, absolutely. The steps up in hospitality, we reckon there are three. First-time manager, you've come off the floor. You come from behind the bar, or you're running a shift in the kitchen. It's a radically different thing to do. One day you're cleaning the toilets, and the next day maybe you're telling your friends to clean the toilets.
Yeah, yeah. I like the way on your website you call it managing your friends.
Indeed, managing your friends. And a lot of credit here must go right now to Phil Eales, who founded Honest Burgers. Watershed worked with Honest Burgers for a long time, and Phil's always been really interested in Watershed, and he's kind of acting as a consultant now, I think I would say, and managing his friends, both the title and the idea that first-time management is the biggest step up in hospitality. All the credit goes to him. So managing your friends is the first set of suite of courses, if I can put it that way. Mm-hmm. They are four interconnected half-day workshops which address some of the real questions that a first-time manager has to deal with. I'm delighted to go into detail if that's of interest.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So there's the four, what, things like leadership style, which is quite...
Owning your leadership style.
Yeah, yeah. And that's where different people have different leadership styles. So as you're saying, it's not about a cookie cutter.
Absolutely. And we use psychometrics for that. We
Myers-Briggs type things?
We use the Herman Brain Dominance Inventory, which has plenty in common with the Myers-Briggs. So the Myers-Briggs, if you're a T versus an F, your upper brain in the Herman, and so on and so on and so on. Herman's quicker. It's often confused with insights, which it isn't. It has a blue thinking style, which a lot of our sommeliers, by the way, you know, who come on the courses, they have a blue approach to life, which is analytical, logical, tangible. So there's a blue thinking style. There's a green thinking style, which is sort of thinking in a more sequential, ordered way, but structured and disciplined, and more relating to the way that you do things rather than the way that you think. You think in a certain way, but you're essentially a doer, and a green thinking style will act in that way. Then there's red, which is humanistic, and then there's yellow, which is holistic, conceptual, and more creative.
Okay, so you're looking at how people's personalities are and then how to tailor that to get what they need to out of their role.
Absolutely.
Okay. So that's interesting. You don't sort of cookie cutter people and say, oh, you're a... I think I can't remember my Myers-Briggs. I'm an ENT something or other. P. No, not perceptive. I'm not perceptive at all. okay. And other things like communication are quite important at that level as well. You talked about handling challenging conversations.
Handling challenging conversations. Yeah, which now, by the way, we've renamed it Finding Your Voice, you know, which is the idea that essentially how you give your team information, often known as feedback, how you give people feedback about their performance really defines a manager. And it can be really, really difficult to actually be direct with people that you care about and people that you're working with. You know, there's a fascinating statistic out there, which out there in the world, the wider world, most feedback lowers performance. So a manager is thinking that what they're doing is lifting somebody's performance, but statistically, most feedback lowers performance.
Really?
For about five reasons. About five different.
What are the reasons? I'm interested.
One of them is that people often use techniques, and so the receiver distrusts them. There's something called the feedback sandwich. It goes by various other names, depending which country you come from, which is the intention is positive, but the impact is not. So the intention is to create safety for the person who's about to receive some information. Unfortunately, that's turned into say something nice to the person first. Then you give them the feedback, which is this bit in the middle, which is the sort of the real point of the conversation. And then you want to send people away positive. And that has become just pay them another compliment which seems sort of insipid. And if you, as a member of staff, as a team member, if you've been trusting your manager to that, if you see them using a technique on you, then the relationship really starts to struggle. Another reason off the top of my head is that everybody knows more about why they're behaving the way that they are than the person giving the feedback.
Mm.
You know, so if someone is late, for example, if someone has a punctuality problem and the manager is giving them some feedback on punctuality, the manager is right when they say, this team is depending on you to be on time and to be a proper member of the team. But only the receiver really knows why they are behaving in the way, and that, you know, why, how people behave is very, very complex. In the very first picturing piano in Fulham, I was working with a bartender, and he, for example, was repeatedly late. And I tried everything I possibly could. I was 20 years ago, 25 years ago. You know, I said, you're letting the team down. People in payroll have got extra work to do. You're making me look bad. The conversations went on and on and on. And then one day we just sort of crossed the road and went to the pub over the road, and we kind of sat down. And he just said, he was married. He'd been married 2 years. He'd had a baby. His wife didn't love him anymore. And his baby didn't particularly like him. But every time he came in late, the rest of the bartenders were really pleased that he was there, because he was a very good bartender. He managed the corner section, which was a really tough section to run behind the bar. And if he was 5 minutes late, he could see the relief on the faces of his colleagues. They weren't cross with him for being late. They were just glad he was here. So he was wanted when he was at work rather than unwanted when he was at home. And so that, I think, is a pretty good example of, if you give somebody feedback and say, and if you do it unskillfully, they know they shouldn't be late, but only they know the reason why they are behaving in an unwanted way. Mm-hmm. Another reason would be, for example, that a lot of the time managers believe that managers should give it and members of staff should receive it. But in fact, if the relationship isn't reciprocal, if the members of staff feel that they can't give their managers feedback about how they're receiving their managers, then again, there isn't the sense of trust in the relationship. So, you know, the feedback is going to go unheard.
Yeah, no, it makes sense, doesn't it? Okay. All right then, Stephen, I think we'll wrap it up there. We'll finish this conversation next week. Cheers very much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Cheers.